Hit it.
Welcome to the Test Talks Podcast, the place to go to geek out on software testing. And now your host, whose mission is to help you succeed with test automation, Joe Colantonio.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Test Talks, a podcast dedicated to all things test automation related. I'm your host, Joe, from joecolantonio.com, where my mission is to help you succeed with automation awesomeness. In today's episode, we're going to be talking all about iOS testing with Andy Obusik. But first, talking about iOS testing, do you know what company can help you with all your automated mobile testing and more? Check out Sauce Labs. Today's episode is sponsored by Sauce Labs. Sauce Labs makes test automation awesome. Sauce's cloud-based Selenium Grid helps developers test web and mobile apps across more than 400 browser and OS platforms. Sauce also supports Appium and popular JavaScript unit testing frameworks and integrates with all the top programming languages, test frameworks, and CI systems. With built-in video recording, debugging tools, and secure tunneling for firewall testing, Sauce helps you ship better software faster. Sign up at saucelabs.com with promo code TESTTALKS14 and get 20 hours of automated testing for free. So with the release of Apple's Watch coming in less than a month, I was thinking, I don't have any episodes on iOS testing. So I thought it'd be fun to talk about iOS testing and get everyone ready to start thinking about how they're going to test Apple Watch apps. So as I was Googling iOS testing, I kept coming across Andy's name. He wrote some excellent articles on Introduction to Testing on iOS and Introduction to iOS Testing with UI Automation on the code.tutsplus.com site. So I reached out to Andy, and luckily he agreed to appear on the show. So check it out. Hey, Andy. Welcome to Test Talks.
Thanks, Joe. How's it going?
Awesome. So before we get started, could you just tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Yeah, sure. My name's Andy Obusik. I've been a software professional for just over 10 years now. My entrance into the field started doing Java enterprise development on the server side. And from there, got the opportunity to start doing some iOS coding. Basically, back around really when the iPhone SDK was first introduced to the public, before there was even an app store, I was working at Vanguard at the time. And we wanted to look into, we knew mobile was going to be big. And we wanted to release an app to the public to basically let our shareholders access their financial data through a native iPhone app. And I was lucky to be on the team that got to work on that right from the get-go. And I think that's really where I fell in love with doing mobile native app development. When I had a chance to do Android a couple years later, that's when I like really knew that more specifically it was like iOS coding that I really loved. It was like when that first time when I actually wrote some code, almost like the hello world, if you will, and was able to deploy it from my machine and see it run on actual physical phone, that was the point I was hooked. So from there, that was back, that's hard to remember when that was, maybe 2008, I think, that happened. And really since then, I've been doing iPhone coding almost full-time. I took a break from it in the full-time job for about a year or two. But even during that period, I was doing work on the side as kind of like independent contractor. And then really kind of realized I missed it so much doing it full-time and left Vanguard for Aweber, which is where I work now as a iOS engineer, and do it full-time there.
Awesome. Today, what I really want to focus on is when I Google iOS testing, you have some great Google juice. You're probably one of the top two or three hits that I get back returned to me from Google. So you wrote a few articles on how to do UI testing with iOS and also unit testing iOS apps. So at a high level, is how did you get into testing?
So I've always seen the value of automated testing. And writing automated tests is hard. It's definitely something you have to be, you have organizational support for and have a team agreement that this is something that the team sees value in, that they're going to spend time doing. And I think joining Aweber, that was just kind of the status quo there, that automated tests as part of the code development routine wasn't even something second-guessed, that there's just as much time and effort spent in writing our automated tests as there is writing the actual production code. Now, that's not to say, I think when I first got into it, that even goes back even years in terms of getting into agile software development, even back possibly even before I started actual iOS development back in the Java world, using tools like JUnit and starting to test out Selenium before I left the web world. So it was kind of like moving into iOS development and then being enabled by such a great engineering organization at AWeber to really just kind of set us out on our own to be like, find the absolute best way to write the highest quality software that you can. And for us, that's in the mobile world. And for me, and specifically, that's in iOS. And that's kind of like what led me to today.
Awesome. Now, I definitely agree with you. Automation testing is hard, and I think it's especially hard for mobile testing. So what are your main tools that you use for testing iOS apps?
Well, the main tools I use is actual iPhone itself. You need the device to test on, and you need your laptop. And so if you think about what are the moving parts there, Xcode is the IDE that you write iOS code in. There might be one or two others that are from third parties, but Xcode is what's provided by Apple and recommended by Apple to write your iOS code in. And when you're writing code in iOS and you want to actually like see the app that you've written, you have two choices. You can either run it in the simulator or on an actual device plugged into your computer. Just like you're actually, we call it the actual button in the GUI is called build and run. And when you build and run your app, that you actually then get it and to, you know, play with it yourself, you can actually do the same thing for the test that you write. So what I mean there is that when you actually go to execute your tests, you have the option to run them either in the simulator or on the actual device. There's pros and cons there to figure out for what given tests at what given point in your development workflow that you want to run on either of those. And then you have to further think through for a given, say I've already, okay, I know I want to pick, I have my unit test to execute. And in addition to the decision of simulator device, you'll have to also think through what OS do you want to run it on and what architecture do you want to run it on, 64-bit or 32-bit. So that's kind of like at a high level when you're setting out to think about how you're going to write, how you're going to run your tests and where they're going to run to really get coverage across what possible devices that your end users are going to be using them on.
I know sometimes people either always run it on a physical phone or run against an emulator. So can you tell us what the pros and cons are for each, maybe at a high level, and when it would be appropriate to run against a simulator and when it'd be more appropriate to run against maybe an actual phone?
Yeah, so one of the code bases I'm working on right now, we have almost 1,000 different unit tests at the moment.
Wow.
And there's a significant time difference in running in the simulator versus the device. The device, it takes much longer to execute. Additionally, another drawback with running on device is that you have to buy and maintain devices. Devices get old. Devices' batteries die. You have to buy new devices when they come out. You have to manage the OS on those devices. So that's a pain.
Yep.
That being said, there really is nothing like testing on the actual device that your end user is going to be testing on. A lot of, I think I want to have physical access to every possible device or as many possible devices that the end users of my applications could be working, could be running my apps on. Now, that's not to say I might necessarily be running automated tests against those, but if I'm already going to have the devices because I might want to try to reproduce a reported bug on the iPhone 6, that, you know, if I can figure out a way to sprinkle that into my workflow to run certain sets of my automated tests on that through development without really slowing it down too much, then I'm going to do that.
Cool. So how do you get over that hump, though, when you have to run against so many configurations, so many devices? Are there any service you use, maybe a third-party service? I know a few that they actually have physical phones that you, it's like a cloud service and you connect and you can run against, you know, pretty much every OS and hardware that you can think of. Do you use that, or is it more you actually have an in-house lab where you have to set up and use the most common that you found from maybe surveying your customers or something?
Yeah, we can get usage stats to pretty much understand what types of devices and what OSs our customers are using. Combine that with the fact that Apple now gives over-the-air updates of new OSs when they come out, that chances are most of the people who are running a given major version of OS are going to be on the latest dot version at any given time, assuming it's not like the past couple of days where iOS 8.2 was just released.
Right.
I personally don't have any experience with any of those third-party services you've talked about. So we actually do maintain. We have this, basically it's a cabinet with like drawers in it that all the devices are kept within, and then they're connected over two USB hubs to a Mac Mini, which is like our build machine.
Okay.
And there might be about 15 different iOS devices connected with that at the moment.
All right, so this might be a little odd question, but I can think that that could be like a maintenance issue at some point. So have you have any experience, or have you had any difficulty maintaining that many devices?
Yeah, it's definitely a headache to keep them all in sync, especially with version, like I was saying, 8.2 was released. I think I got the over-the-air update notice on my phone yesterday. Apple announced it last week at their watch event. And that prompt that pops up on your phone, you've probably seen it, says iOS version 8.2 available, download now.
Yep.
And that's a prompt that you cannot say, don't remind me of. Like, okay, yes, I realize this. No, don't upgrade and never remind me again. And one of the major headaches of that is if that prompt comes up, it's totally modal that you can't do anything else in the system, even through the command line. So if we have a Jenkins job that kicks off to run tests on that device and that prompt is up, that you have to go over there manually and dismiss that prompt. So that's kind of an annoying headache. Additionally, say we have a couple devices that are like earmarked with iOS 7. If we inadvertently go over there and update those to the latest version of iOS 8, you can't downgrade back to iOS 7. As far as I know, that's totally impossible to do. And for us, it's like those are like our magic iOS 7 devices because our apps support iOS 7 and up. And we want to make sure we not only test on that, but also can try to reproduce bugs that we might get reported from customers. So it's like if we inadvertently click update on iOS 7, there's no going back. And, you know, we're kind of like looking on eBay at that point for an iPhone running iOS 7.
When you do actual UI automation, are there any specific software or tools that you use for iOS?
Yeah, I would break down the type of testing that you can do in iOS, probably similar to much other software written. You can test it at the unit level, doing unit tests, and that's with the framework called XCTest, and that's also provided by Apple, and there's pretty good integration with the IDE for writing your tests, running your tests, and even doing TDD workflow.
Cool.
And then there's your more typical functional tests, and these are like your black box tests, in which you're going to write code that simulates an end user navigating your app. For functional testing, Apple provides a tool called UI Automation. And this is another Apple-sanctioned way of doing this. Now, there's the only problem with UI Automation is that UI Automation tests are written in JavaScript, which iOS code itself is written in Objective-C or Swift, which is fairly different than JavaScript. And UI automation itself is pretty lightly documented. So it's like problems. If you have problems, you're kind of like left up to trial and error and the community for support because, you know, it seems like Xcode release to Xcode release, we're not seeing much in the way of UI automation kind of updates from Apple. So that's kind of like the state of testing in terms of what Apple provides. There's a couple pretty popular third-party ways to test your iOS code. And I'd say there's even like beyond the popular ones, there's a fairly good amount of variety in what's available as well. Another tool that we heavily use with our code is called OC Mock. And it's like your typical mock object framework. And it's really good for stubbing out and making mock objects of stuff like code that leverages a remote API, like a web service.
Nice, yep.
Or code that also relies on UI being available, like UI objects that aren't really stuff that you can easily instantiate yourself through unit tests. So OCmock is very, I love OCmock. I don't know, might be one of my favorite open source products that I use at the moment. So the next one we're looking at is called KIF. And KIF, K-I-F, stands for Keep It Functional. And KIF is kind of like the, I'll call it UI Automation Plus. It's third party and it's open source. You write tests much in the same way as UI Automation, where you're simulating user tapping through the app. And like UI Automation, it relies on accessibility labels you define in your application, which have the side benefit or really primary purpose, making your app accessible to people who may be visually impaired that are being prompted through audio cues of how to use your app. That's UI Automation and KIF both rely on you defining accessibility labels on your UI elements in terms of how they navigate the app. But a couple specific benefits that KIF has over UI Automation is that you actually are writing the tests in Objective-C which is now supported Swift. So there's no learning curve of swapping languages between Objective-C and JavaScript like you had to do with UI Automation. Additionally, the way KIF tests are executed is they're executed in the same type of target that your unit tests are executed in, which is not the case for UI Automation. I didn't mention that before. But in order to execute UI Automation tests, you have to use this other tool by Apple called Instruments, which is also like their profiler tool, which is actually a great tool, but kind of like UI Automation is like tacked on to it. And it's kind of, it's not, you know, I think I've heard you talk about this before, but like you want your tests repeatable and quickly executable, your unit tests. So with KIF, by integrating with the same way that XE tests runs unit tests, is that it makes those kind of like GUI-based tests much faster to execute.
I've actually never heard of KIF, so that's awesome. I love hearing about new tools.
There's another tool we're looking at. It's kind of more like on our radar to start research into and haven't really done much besides some of like the initial tutorials of it, but it looks really exciting. And I've seen it used in a couple open source projects. It's called FB Snapshot Test Case. Have you heard of that one?
No.
So this was a tool, I think, originally created by Facebook, certainly maintained by them right now. And basically what FB Snapshot Test Case does is it allows you to verify your UI code by doing visual diffs between saved screenshots.
That sounds familiar. It sounds like another tool that I've recently started using called Apply Tools, which is awesome. And basically it's all image-based. So that sounds like, is this similar?
Yep, you got it. And so you can do it. You can do it at a more granular level than the full screenshot of the device. Like you can pick a little UI view is what you subclass, like when you see a little widget on the screen, anything from a piece of text to something more complicated. And you can actually just isolate that snapshot test case to that UI view subclass. I see some usefulness with that beyond the normal kind of simulated click and play that you might get with UI Automation.
Right. A lot of these tools, do they make use of UI Automation under the covers? Or is it like a wrapper almost on top of it to make it easier to do testing against iOS? Or is it just using something completely different?
I'm not sure. I can't imagine that either FB Snapshot Test Case or KIF are using UI Automation under the covers. KIF predominantly advertises on their GitHub README that it uses private APIs in their code with in terms of how they're actually like doing the magic under the hood. And in iOS land of the Apple's App Store guidelines, you never want to ship an app that contains code accessing private APIs because you'll get rejected almost automatically. I think they even have code scan tools that look for this. So you want to make sure that if you do use KIF, that you're separating out your test code and from getting included with your actual production released binary. It could be a debate. Some people kind of smells a little bit to me like I would just want to, you know, be aware personally and like really make it a conscious decision to use KIF because, say, because they use private APIs, if iOS 9 came out and they and Apple totally rewrote how those API those private APIs work that KIF is using, you could be dead in the water until the KIF community updates their tools to be compatible with the new version of iOS.
Yep. Are you looking for a tool to completely replace UI automation, or are you looking for these tools to enhance your existing test suite?
I think from a pure what features are provided, KIF has the opportunity to totally replace UI automation.
Wow.
Except with that caveat that it uses private APIs, KIF is a pretty strong contender in my mind that I would even advocate within my own projects to start using KIF going forward rather than UI automation.
For UI automation, are you able to run these tests just like you would any other tests using a continuous integration tool like Jenkins?
The way you do that is by using Instruments command line script.
Okay.
And so Instruments itself is, again, that tool provided by Apple that allows you to do a bunch of different things to kind of just do general QA of your app, memory profiling, CPU profiling of your app in use, as well as UI automation. It's normally a GUI-based tool that you're going to use side by side with Xcode. There's also a command line version of it available. And so you get, you know, I think you have to specify like 7 parameters to this, like file names, paths, device IDs, and then you ultimately, it will then run your UI automation tests from the command line on your device. So the way I use that is that from the Jenkins build on that is going to use a Mac Mini as a slave, then actually executes UI script, which is that Instruments command line execution of UI automation on the devices I specify.
Continuous integration, any tips or tricks for getting things to run in CI?
Yeah, in continuous integration, I've had the most experience using Jenkins for continuous integration with iOS. Specifically, you know, some of the decisions at hand are when you're going to run different types of tests. For us, we have a fairly mature code review process,
mm-hmm.
in which we're constantly pushing to branches, and code does not get merged unless 2 other people sign off on it, and Jenkins does some level of verification on that code. And so I call some level of verification, I leave that a little bit anomalous because it kind of differs by app, by platform in terms of iOS or Android. In general, though, that's going to be running all unit tests on at least 1 device. Now, that then is kind of like the start of continuous integration. So that automatically, those builds are kicked off on push of the branch at the same time people can go off and code review it. Once the code actually gets merged into the actual working branch, say we follow a Git flow model, so that's like develop at this point. And then on merge, UI automation tests are run. And at that point, that's like our functional tests are running. And we put that there because we didn't want to block code review on those tests because those tests do take a lot longer to run.
Yep.
I think we might be in the process of an iteration there that we might move those up earlier in the chain if we can figure out a way to get them to run faster, whether that's rewriting some of them in KIF or figuring out a way to make them happen in parallel. Not really sure there, but I think we want to get that value add earlier in our workflow beyond waiting for that code to merge, because I think we've seen cases where we've let code get to that point where we haven't run those tests locally, and UI automation's caught some bugs for us, so we want that to happen pre-merge. So that happens. That UI automation is going to run on merge of the code. And then, so to kind of get some of that device coverage we were talking about earlier, we have a whole handful of jobs that run every night. And those are just going to run a bunch of different tests on a bunch of different devices that cover different architectures in OS. And those happen every night. I'd say those are marginally useful. I don't know that we've actually caught any bugs in them yet. The safety blanket of that coverage feels good at this point. And so that's kind of like, that's the majority of the workflow between releases. Is that happening? once code is actually ready, we're ready to ship. So we kind of differentiate some of the terminology we use. So we differentiate ship versus release. And if you are unfamiliar with like iPhone, iOS development, one of the major toll gates in terms of getting your code to customer is Apple. So you have to actually submit your code to Apple for review.
Yep.
And review can take anywhere from a couple hours to some of the worst cases, a couple months. There's actually a couple hashtags on Twitter that you can follow or go check for kind of like the average current review time. And I don't know, usually in my experience, app updates are reviewed within a couple days, like 2 to 3 days. Whereas depending on the queue for new apps, it might take more like 7 to 10 days for a brand new app.
Wow.
But that's where it's important with your development workflow that we like actually came up with terminology to differentiate shipping versus releasing.
Right, right.
And because shipping is like all the activity that we're going to get done ahead of actually sending it to Apple. And then we can actually wait while Apple has the code to then kind of like put some of the finishing touches on the stuff that's not really actually included with the binary. Maybe it's like Git cleanup or stuff like that that we can do as part of release, which is then going to be coordinated for the app to actually go live.
So though at any given time, you could have multiple things ready to ship. Like say you have code base, you want to ship that. You submitted it for review. You've added some more functionality in the meantime. You have another release ready to be shipped. So do you start building up queues at that point?
No, locally, it doesn't move. I don't think our development of features moves that quickly.
Yep.
If that were to happen, we were, like, for instance, if we did further testing on a build we sent to Apple and found a critical bug in it, we'd probably pull the binary from the review queue and submit a new binary.
Okay.
New feature development doesn't quite happen that fast in projects I've worked on.
Cool, but this actually flows in pretty nicely with the question I want to ask next. And that's what someone asked me on Twitter. They wanted to know if you have ever tested any apps to the App Store guidelines, which it sounds like you have. So they wanted to know if any tips on how to avoid app approval delays or denials.
Yeah, so if my quick answers there would be, one, I mentioned earlier, don't include code that accesses private APIs that will guarantee you rejection. Another thing is you want to make sure what you're sending Apple is something you're proud of. If you send them an app that crashes frequently, crashes at all, really, or, you know, doesn't really scale well to all the different form factors in terms of how the UI is laid out, like make sure your UI looks good on the iPhone 6 Plus all the way down to the iPhone 4 if you're supporting that, if you claim to support that range of devices. Now, you can't really test for either of those. So unfortunately, it's kind of a non-answer in terms of how can you automate it, test for that stuff in an automated way. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that you could do from a test perspective. I guess, you know, testing to make sure your code isn't buggy is kind of contributes to that. If you have, for instance, if your app relies on a service that you provide, so for instance, like if your app provides access to an online service that you have customers that pay for, Apple will require a demo account to use. So you'll want to make sure that demo account looks good for when the app reviewer gets it and logs in with that demo account. So that's actually that you can kind of, you know, dual purpose that demo account to then also be used with your GUI-based tests to log in with your app with that demo account, because that's an account that will, you know, probably the data around it will remain stable and not change a lot, which then can kind of like reduce the flakiness of your GUI tests, which are inherently flaky if the data that's behind the test is changing.
Yep. That's a good tip, actually. So, Andy, with the release of the Apple Watch coming out in April, do you know if you would be using the same tools for UI testing? How are you preparing for the Apple Watch, or are you preparing at all?
Well, you always want to stay ahead of the curve, right, with the latest trends in technology in your field. So I think I definitely have spent a lot of time looking into what WatchKit provides. That's the framework by Apple that you actually use to write watch apps. I've done some playing around with trying to write unit tests for WatchKit code and haven't had a lot of success. So you basically write your WatchKit code in a separate target from your main iOS project. Now, targets in the context of like your code base are just like separate groupings of code that gets into different binaries. So when WatchKit is released, like when watch apps are made available to the public, the WatchKit, the code that you write for Apple Watch apps is going to be bundled with the iOS app that's paired with that WatchKit app. So it's not like you're going to be downloading one app for the watch and one app for the iPhone. As a result, when you're testing it, it's all in the same project. So you're writing, even though it's in separate targets. Now, the thing is, some of the code that I've been just kind of running tutorials on websites and stuff, trying to write tests for it, I've just run into undocumented problems trying to instantiate some of the WatchKit framework code from the device. So combine that with really the lack of documentation around such an early release of WatchKit, and then add in the variable of then trying to write unit tests for it, that it's like an uphill battle of really how much you're gonna struggle through to get your automated tests for your WatchKit code.
Now, is WatchKit still in beta?
I would double check on Apple's developer site, but they did release Xcode 6.2 last week after their big event. And Xcode 6.2 allows you to write WatchKit code. And I think it is publicly available, so I would say it's no longer in beta. Although, as far as I know, they're not accepting submissions of WatchKit apps yet.
Cool. Yeah, it seems like it's going to be a cool device. But like you said, it sounds like it's really early infancy stages, that still a lot of kinks to be worked out before it's a clear cut steps on how to automate it or even test it.
Right. And the rumors are that like the current incarnation of WatchKit is very limiting. Like what, as a developer, what you can do in your WatchKit app is it's really like a total slave to the actual iOS app itself. Doing stuff like automation requires animating through images, like a little flip book, like you can actually write animation. All types of like network requests and persistence data access has to happen through the iPhone app. So it's not really even like the WatchKit apps are like truly native apps at this point. So what I wonder is like how much, and I think people, the community generally anticipates that come later this year, they're going to truly enable like these independent native apps. So I wonder even like how much general tooling support is Apple going to provide at this point for this first version of WatchKit, if it's all going to change in less than a year anyway.
Right. That's a good point. So Andy, are there any resources or books that you would recommend to someone to learn how to get started with testing iOS applications?
I think with XC Test itself, my first stop would be Apple's documentation.
Okay.
That's really good around XC Test. Additionally, UI automation I would start with Apple's website there. Pretty much in terms of like web resources, my go-to resources for finding help online would be like Tuts Plus, where I've written articles, raywunderlich.com, where I'm a tutorial editor, and stackoverflow.com. I think those are kind of like my three go-to places in terms of when I need to learn how to do something new, I'm going to go to. Like Tuts Plus and raywunderlich.com, they're more like your tutorial sites, where there's some Q&A, and then you compare that with Stack Overflow, and that's like just black and white. You have a question, you can find an answer, or ask the question, get an answer. I don't personally am not a reader of technical books as much, because it's like I find by the time I get around to reading a whole book, the technology's changed, and it takes me so long to get through the introductory chapters that once I get to really what I'm looking for, it's like there's more up-to-date information online.
Cool. Yeah, there's one book that I was looking through today. I have a Safari Books subscription, so I'm able to preview these pretty quickly, called Test iOS Apps with UI Automation, Bug Hunting Made Easy by Jonathan Penn. Seems pretty cool. Goes over UI automation step by step, so another resource I'll probably be reading a little bit more about.
You have to check that one out. I know all like the KIF GitHub page and the FB Snapshot Test Case GitHub page, there's a good community around both those tools.
So can you tell us a little bit more about Swift with iOS testing?
Sure. So Swift is a new programming language that Apple announced at their big developer conference in the summer of 2014. Now, I'm still coming up to speed on Swift. I've kind of had the perspective where I'm like, you know, prove it to me, Apple. Why do I need to change to this new language? I can code Objective-C easily enough. My main goal is deliver value to the customer. So why do I need to slow myself down and learn this new programming language? And I'm coming around on it. Now, it's not really what's been opening my eyes to Swift versus Objective-C is not language to language, but it's programming paradigm of functional programming. Objective-C is object-oriented, and there's kind of like some functional concepts introduced like blocks, which are closures, and that you can have access to those in Objective-C. Now, the thing in Swift is that the way Swift is written is it has much more, call it like, you know, intent for functional programming built into the language. And I don't want to really embarrass myself by trying to explain like how that's done because I'm, like I said, I'm still learning.
Yep.
But some of the things I really hate about UI code I've written in Objective-C is the statefulness introduced into that UI code. So as soon as like, if I'm writing a class that represents a screen on the iPhone, and as soon as I start introducing like class level variables to that code, such that methods in that class do start doing different behavior based on like 10 other variables that are like not even in the context of that method, that's where that just makes testing like insane for that method, because now for every new variable you introduce, it's just like another piece of state that you have to consider, and chances are you're going to miss edge cases. Where you think about like the functional way of doing that is that really a function in, I think, is like defined by math, even not in programming, is something that for a given input always returns the same output. And that's going to be, and so then that rules out like any other impact by like any other thing that exists in your code base. So how does this factor into testing? I think that great, I think if you start to move to a functional programming model and take on the concepts to eliminate statefulness in the code that's you're writing for your UIs, that it'll simplify the testing that you need to do of your code. And then it also really it'll like amplify the power of the test that you do write for that code in the UI.
So do you think Swift is going to replace Objective-C, or is this just another option that they're going to give to developers?
Well, that's one of the hot questions right now. My personal opinion is that Swift will never replace Objective-C. In Objective-C now, for apps that you write in Objective-C, you're still accessing certain APIs that are written in C. Mm-hmm. So you can write C code in Objective-C, and there's plenty of APIs from Apple in C. So I don't think, by the same note, that even if Swift, like 5 years from now, is the predominant language for writing iOS apps, there's still going to be APIs that are available that are written by Apple in Objective-C.
Okay.
I think time will tell what happens with Swift. Right now, there's, you know, I don't know that any apps from Apple are written in Swift, and I don't know that any of their frameworks are written in Swift. So those are kind of some like your leading indicators of like the direction that Apple's taking. They're certainly pitching it from a leadership level. Like you read interviews with Tim Cook, and he's talking about Swift. They talk about it in their keynote. I'm sure it'll get more coverage this year at their developer conference in the summer.
Now, did you cover this in one of your podcasts recently?
Yeah, it's been an ongoing topic because I think I've been, in comparison to my co-host on Brotherly Mobile, my podcast, we have differing opinions of Swift. Matt Ryan, he's an Android developer. And I think for people who don't code Objective-C every day, Objective-C is kind of like intimidating syntax. And Swift, it has like the opportunity to learn something from the ground up that's probably good investment for the future, I think is more attractive to some people.
Yep.
and the syntax of Swift is also more familiar to other languages. So especially if it's like up-and-comers in the field that are coming from other platforms, like it's an easier transition. So I think those are all like things in the plus column for Swift.
I've heard one of the drawbacks to UI automation is the syntax is ugly.
Yeah, and the editor is not the most... There's no syntax highlighting. There's no code completion for UI automation. It's like you might as well be writing in a text file. Now, one of the cool things you can do with UI automation, though, and I didn't mention this earlier, this is kind of like I don't know if it's documented or not, but it's certainly not well advertised, is that sometimes like one of the hardest things to do with UI automation is like get access to the given like widget on the screen that you need to like make an assertion against,
yep,
like some label buried like in the middle of your UI. So there's actually this like recorder that you can use with UI automation. So you can kind of like click record, your app gets launched, and then you can just click through the app. And for every interaction that you do, the UI automation line of code is dumped to the console that you can then just pretty much copy and paste into your test. I don't really advertise doing that, just blindly copying and pasting, but it's really useful if you, for instance, have like a sequence of actions that you're really not sure how to code from scratch, but you can then kind of use that recorder interface to see that flow and then maybe and migrate a portion of that into your actual test code.
Cool. Yeah, I think I read up on that and people were saying that it's hard to get sometimes the elements, log element tree, and that sometimes the recorder can help you with that.
No, log element tree is a really useful method in UI automation. That basically, you can call that method on any UI automation object, and then that just literally dumps the element tree of everything under that. And it's nice because it's there and can kind of give you some idea to the structure of how UI automation sees your UI. It's bad, though, that you actually have to run your test and to execute that line of code to have that outputted. And I've seen variation in terms of what that method log element tree returns in iOS 7 versus iOS 8. That meaning you could then write one line of code that's going to then work in iOS 8 but doesn't work in iOS 7. And then you are adding more flakiness to your tests, which you're just losing if you do that.
Right. So do you have any tips on how to maintain and organize UI automation tests? Because I also heard that sometimes it's hard to organize them or keep maintain them.
Yeah, and that's made even harder because Apple gives no guidance on how to do it.
Right.
You're literally, you could write a multi-thousand line file of JavaScript commands for your UI automation test and have it be totally non-maintainable, but totally working. Until you have to make one change to line 3,867. A couple recommendations I have is break it up into methods, just like you would your unit test. Apply those same best practices. Make a method that's going to test one certain thing in your app, that's going to do one single assertion. Name that method well. Use logging statements provided by UIA Logger, which is an API in UI automation, to then give console output to help you understand when the test fails, what happened. Once you have your kind of atomic methods of test that are then, you can aggregate together into a suite, then you want to break them up into separate files. So just again, like your unit tests, you have multiple methods in a given class for your unit tests. Do the same thing with your automation tests. Create a JavaScript file that represents all the tests for a single page or single use case in your app. And do that and rinse and repeat that. So then you have different files, and then you're going to have one main kind of test runner file, which is going to import all those other files and then execute the test methods in the order that you want. And then just like you can factor your tests well into those like nice little chunks of test, you can also refactor out any common code. For instance, if there was like a flow of screens, if you needed to log out and log in, and that was like 20 lines of UI automation code that you would otherwise have to be like copying and pasting everywhere, refactor that out into a utility method that exists in a separate file that can be sourced in everywhere it needs to be.
Before we go, is there one piece of actionable advice you can give someone to improve their iOS testing efforts? And let us know the best way to find or contact you.
The one piece of advice I would give to improve your testing efforts is to learn the keyboard shortcuts. Those are something that have sped up my workflow incredibly. So specifically, the couple I'll give is Command U will run all your every unit test you have. Command Option Control U will run only the test in context of where the cursor's at. So for instance, in your TDD workflow, if your cursor's within a single test case method and you do Control Option Command U, it'll only run the test for that specific method. And then the last one is Control Option Command G, and that will rerun the last test. So even if your cursor then moves after that, you just mash Control Option Command G. You remember those are the three buttons in the, I use that on my left hand, Control Option Command, and then right hand hit G or U, and that really speeds up your TDD workflow. But that'll be my testing tip. If you want to get in contact with me, follow me on Twitter at Obusek, O-B-U-S-E-K.
Great. Thank you so much, Andy. And in your podcast, is it bi-weekly? Is it monthly?
Our schedule that we went with for about 10 episodes was weekly. And we're kind of changing the format right now. And we might be slowing down the schedule a little bit. So it's Brotherly Mobile is the podcast. You can find that at brotherlymobile.com. And there'll be a new episode soon.
Awesome. Thank you, Andy, for your iOS automation testing awesomeness. For links to everything of value that we talked about in this episode, head on over to www.testtalks.com/46. And while you're there, make sure to click on the More Info link under our exclusive sponsor section to learn more about all the awesome products and services from our sponsor, Sauce Labs. And just a heads up, next week, April 6th, is Easter, so there will be no Test Talks next week. But don't worry, we'll be back the following week with more automation awesomeness. So that's it for today's episode of Test Talks. I'm Joe, and my mission is to help you succeed with automation awesomeness. As always, test everything and keep the good. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Test Talks podcast. Head on over to www.testtalks.com for full show notes, amazing blog articles, and other automation awesomeness.